Good morning, and welcome to another in our series of mini shiurim on the book of Yehoshua. We are learning in the merit of the IDF, Israel's emergency services, the hostages, and the injured. And we are in Perek Tet Zayin, chapter 16. I expect to wrap chapter 16 and start on chapter 17 as well today. Perek Tet Zayin, chapter 16, introduced us to the portions of Ephraim and Menasheh. They were identified, as we said previous session, as Bnei Yosef, lumped together as the sons of Yosef. We know that Menasheh got some land east of the Yarden, but we are now in the area west of the Yarden. So we started on this. We started on Perek Tet Zayin last time, and we were up to Pasuk Dalet, sentence 4, Vayinchalu b'nei Yosef, Menasheh ve'Ephraim. The sons of Yosef, Menasheh and Ephraim, got this portion. And then it says, Vayihi gevul b'nei Ephraim l'mishpachosam, and the boundary of Ephraim by family was, and then it continues to detail Ephraim's portion. So that we mention Menasheh and Ephraim, but we launch into the land of Ephraim. So why did we do that? Why didn't we do Menasheh? First of all, you mentioned Menasheh first in naming both of them. And second, Menasheh is the Bechor. He's the firstborn. So Professor Kiel in the Dam Mikra offers three approaches. First approach is to say simply because you said Menasheh and Ephraim, so you just mentioned Ephraim, so we continue with Ephraim. The Gemara will term that Pasach b'may desalik minei. You started with the one you had just mentioned. That's one possibility. Alternatively, because we're starting from the south and working our way north, remember that when we describe the division of the land east of the Yarden, we started with Reuven further south, then moved north to Gad, and then north of that to Menasheh. So now, in describing the distribution of land in Israel, we started with Yehuda, and then we moved up, and it's Ephraim, and then Menasheh is north of Ephraim. So that's a second way to look at it. Or alternatively, as Abarbanel in fact suggests, it's like what Yaakov did. When Yaakov gave his brachos to Menasheh and Ephraim, Sikelas Yadav, he switched his hands to give Ephraim the right hand and said he's going to be the greater of the two. So maybe that's why. I suppose you could also suggest, remember that we discussed why Yosef went second, and some of the answer was because of Ephraim, either because Yehoshua is from Ephraim, or because Ephraim is going to produce kings. So maybe, since Ephraim, according to some, is the reason why Yosef is getting their land second, therefore Ephraim, it makes sense to go before Menasheh. However you slice it, it starts on Ephraim. We already listed the southern boundary of this land. And now the psukim give us the northern boundary of the land. I'm not going to go through the place names that are mentioned here in the psukim. It would basically constitute, you know, me just listing place names. I will, though, attach to the file when I upload it and put it also in the WhatsApp chat, a graphic from Professor Yehuda Elitzur, describing the portion of Ephraim and giving you a map that you can work with if you want to look at the psukim inside the text. The only things that I will note from Perek Tet Zayin, from the description of the boundaries, is Perek Tet Zayin Pasuk Tes, sentence 9, which says, Ve'he'orim hamivdalos livnei Ephraim besoch nachalas b'nei Menasheh kol he'orim v'chatzrehen. There were boundary cities that were technically on Menasheh's land, but they were given to Ephraim. Why would this have been, why would they have done that? So it seems likely that it's because Ephraim has relatively little land. Menasheh gets much more land. Ephraim is not that large. When we do the census at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, Ephraim is, I think, 32,000 and change, which is not definitely large among the Shvatim. But on the other hand, maybe that's why they get cities that are actually on Menasheh's land. This section concludes by saying, as we did with Yehuda, Velo harishu es haKnani hayoshev beGezer. They did not conquer the Knani who dwelled in the city of Gezer. Vayeshev haKnani bekerev Ephraim ad hayom hazeh vayihi lemas oved. And the Knani lived in Ephraim until this very day. And they paid tribute, a tribute not just of money, but of work, to Ephraim. Now, this is similar to the ending of Yehuda, where it said that Yehuda did not conquer Yevus, who were in Yerushalayim. Professor Keel in the Dot Mikra notes that when it says Ad Hayom Hazeh, until this very day, that means until Yehoshua is written. Because we do know that in Shlomo's day, in Malachim Aleph, Perek Tes, chapter 9 of Malachim, Paro conquers Gezer and gives it as a present to Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo married his daughter, and he gives him Gezer. And we discuss, you can look in Sefer Malachim, the fact that the Jews need to rely on Paro to conquer Gezer is in and of itself a criticism of Shlomo, a criticism of the Jews of his day. So that wraps up chapter 16. Chapter 17 gives us Menashe's land. And here it's worth revisiting something that I think we discussed a little bit back in Perek Aleph, back in chapter 1. But it's been a long time. And also not everybody who is on this WhatsApp group was here when we were doing chapter 1. So I'm going to revisit it. Chapter 17 begins. Vahi ha-goro le-matei Menashe. The lottery then went to Menashe. Ki hu b'chor Yosef. He's firstborn of Yosef. And then it tells us, Lemachir b'chor Menashe, avi ha-gilad, ki hu haya ish milchama, vahi lo ha-gilad v'habashan. It tells us that Machir, the firstborn of Menashe, he got land in the Gilad, east of the Yarden. He was a warrior, and he got east of the Yarden, the Gilad and the Bashan. And that leads to the question, why was the tribe of Menashe split? They were not in the group that requested land east of the Yarden. That was Reuven and Gad in Bamidbar chapter 32. And yet, by the time you get to the end of Bamidbar 32, suddenly Menashe is thrown into the mix. What happened? How did Menashe end up getting land east of the Yarden? Not to mention, it's only part of Menashe. So, two basic schools of thought, and then some other ideas. One school of thought says it's a practical decision. Ramban, in the end of Sefer Bamidbar, Bamidbar Lamed Beis, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, says, simply put, the land east of the Yarden is just too big for the two tribes of Reuven and Gad to hold, and some of Menashe wanted to go. So therefore, Moshe said, all right, I'm going to give you this land that's east of the Yarden, and that way we'll be able to hold it. That's Ramban in Bamidbar. Alternatively, Abarbanel suggests, Mitzudas David brings it too, that the people of Machir were warriors, and they went to the land east of the Yarden because that's a very dangerous piece of property. The neighbors are always hostile. You know, Ammon, Moab, Midian, Amalek, they're all a threat. And so they went there in order to intimidate the neighbors to keep them from invading. So this is a school of thought that says it's fundamentally a military decision to put them there, as opposed to the second school of thought brought by the Netziv, which is that this was a spiritual move. Yesterday, we read in the Haftorah, Shoftim Perek Hei, Shiraz Devora, and she talked about Mechokekim, coming from Machir. Mechokekim are lawgivers. So Moshe saw, as the Netziv reads it, the Netziv makes his comment in Devarim Perek Gimel Pasuk Tezayin, Moshe saw that the power of Torah would be weak in this land east of the Yarden, and so he put the lawgivers, the Mechokekim, there in order to teach people. That was what they were trying to do, and Moshe told the Jews in Devarim Perek Gimel about this so that they would know you should always live in a place of Torah. And he gave them a lot of land in order to appease them because, you know, they're moving east of the Yarden. So that's your second central school of thought, is that's a spiritual move. Two other ideas that are brought. Radak floats the idea that Machir ben Menashe gets the land east of the Yarden because he conquered it. Points to Bamidbar chapter 32, sentence 39, where it says that, that Machir was the conqueror there. They're mighty, they are, as he puts it, firstborn, son of firstborn, which somehow makes them stronger. On the other hand, the Netziv really doesn't like that idea. The Netziv says, it's general principle, we didn't see that whoever conquered a particular piece of land got it. They're acting as agents of the Jewish people. So the Netziv is not on board with that idea. Last idea I'll mention, this is a very popular one. You hear this from a lot of people. Rabbi Zion Firer says it in Midei Shabbat B'Shabbato, that it was to ensure unity, because this way you'd remember their other half is on the other side. This is an important point Not at this stage in Sefer Yehoshua, but much later in Perek Chavbeis or so, when the Shvatim who are east of the Yarden go back east, we find that there is a concern that they will somehow be considered less Jewish than those who are on the western side of the Yarden. So that is actually a matter of great significance. So Machir's family gets land east of the Yarden, and then we're told in chapter 17, sentence 3, V'litzlav chod ben chefer ben gil... I'm sorry, I jumped. Sentence 2. V'yihi livnei Menashe hanosarim l'mishpechosam. The rest of Menashe receives, and these are b'nei Avi Ezer, b'nei Chelek, b'nei Asriel, b'nei Shechem, chefer, Shmidah. They get land west of the Yarden. Those are the ones who are going to get the land that we're now going to distribute. Professor Keel in the Dot Mikra notes that the names of almost all of these families have been found on pottery shards unearthed in Mitzudat Shomron from the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, which is, of course, fascinating in its own right. Then we get to Tzlafchad and Tzlafchad's daughters, because they did not disappear with the end of Sefer Bamidbar. They are, in fact, still around, and they are going to approach Yehoshua to receive their property, and we will start with that, God willing, next time. Thanks.